Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association, saluting Earth Day on April 22nd with an ongoing commitment to help offset carbon emissions with sustainable harvesting of Missouri forests. Details at choosewood.com.
From St. Louis Public Radio. This is St. Louis on the Air.
The brain has an extraordinary capacity for plasticity.
I still have a hard time picking up things, but at least I can hold things and help me do so with my left hand. So
this brain-computer interface is essentially best enabling our innate plasticity to maximize our ability to remodel itself.
I just got done building a boat for fishing, so I've improved quite a bit. I have use of my arm and movement with my hands and fingers.
I'm Sarah Fetsky. The Food and Drug Administration recently gave its approval to a new, first-of-its-kind device pioneered by a startup at Washington University. The Ipsy Hand Upper Extremity Rehabilitation System was developed by Neurolutions, Inc., and it sounds almost like science fiction. It helps people disabled by a stroke regain control of their arm and hand function by using their minds to control the device. The Ipsy Hand has been designated as a breakthrough device, and joining us today to talk about it is Dr. Eric Luthart. He is a professor of neurosurgery at Washington University School of Medicine. He is also the chief of WashU's Division of Neurotechnology, a professor of biomedical and mechanical engineering and neuroscience, and the chief scientific officer at Neurolutions, Inc. So, Dr. Luthart, that is quite a long list of titles, and welcome to the show.
Well, thanks very much for having me.
So tell us about this Ipsy hand. What does it look like when it's on a patient?
No, that's a great question. So the system, just to be very clear, is non-invasive. Again, even though I'm a neurosurgeon, you know, this is not an implantable device. Basically, it really has three parts. One is this headset that you put on, that, and we really designed it so that the system can be placed on a patient's head by the patient themselves, even if one side of their body is paralyzed. You can imagine almost it's this kind of, it almost looks a little bit like a kind of a mechanical beanie. And then the second part is the robotic orthosis or robotic exoskeleton that's wearable. And again, the patient can don and doff this by themselves. And then the third part is a tablet. So that gives them instructions and walks them through the process of how to use the system.
And when you refer to an exoskeleton, their whole body isn't encased in this. It's almost just like a robo arm.
It's like a robotic wearable glove.
Okay. So they put on this glove, they put on the headset, they have their tablet. How does it then work?
So there's some really deep science that allows the system to work. I mean, on the surface level, they think about moving their paralyzed hand, and the system picks up the signals from that intent to move from the uninjured side of the brain and allows the robotic exoskeleton, that wearable orthosis, robo glove, and it opens and closes their hand when they think about it. Now, the deep science is that over the past 13 years, we really wanted to understand how, if you, for instance, ask a patient that it cannot move their left hand, they can think about moving it, they can even imagine moving it, but they just can't actually do it. And as it turns out, some of the information for that intent to move is on the uninjured side of the brain. And we, over the years, have discovered how to kind of pick up that signal first invasively, then non-invasively, and how to convert those brain signals into a movement that allows the person to think about it and control that robotic orthosis that opens and closes their hand when they think about it. And more importantly, it's not just that. It's that when you couple the brain signals with that movement, over time, that leads to a functional restoration that eventually they don't need this system anymore. They can actually use their hand again, because essentially the system has helped kind of train them to rewire their brains.
So this trains them to rewire their brains. Tell me what it's like the first time somebody puts this on. If I start thinking about moving my hand and I've never done this before, wearing this robo arm, the Ipsy hand, does it start moving immediately, or do I have to really work at that at the beginning?
No, that's a very good question. So when a patient gets enrolled, we do what's called a screening, where we do a couple independent sessions where basically we have them imagine moving their hand. Mm-hmm. And that's where we really kind of cone down and identify those specific brain signals associated with that intent to move. And what we often find is when they start using it, and they have to use it every day for the protocol is really every day for a multitude of weeks, that over time their performance does improve. So at first, you think about moving your hand, and it does indeed open and close, but you're perhaps not as good as you'd like to be. And then over time, it gets better and better. But as you're learning how to use that system in an improved, you know, fashion, that as it turns out, also your brain is learning to also control your hand in a better fashion.
Boy, the brain is an amazing thing. I mean, just hearing about this, I feel like my mind is kind of exploding a little bit.
Well, I think one of the things we really have to, you know, kind of keep in our minds is that the brain has an extraordinary capacity for plasticity. And in some senses, we're this brain computer interface is essentially best enabling our innate plasticity to maximize our ability to remodel itself. And our brain is always changing itself. And after injuries, it's changing to recover. And sometimes it needs a little extra help with a brain computer interface.
Well, that brain computer interface, this is the Ipsy hand, just got its FDA approval. It's so exciting. And if you're curious, as we're talking about this, we have photos of this device. You can now find them on the St. Louis on the Air Twitter page. That's at STL on Air. You can also find them on our website, stlpr.org. And we're talking today to Dr. Eric Luthard, who helped invent this device through his role at Washington University and also as chief scientific officer at Neurolutions, Inc. And now we're going to be joined by somebody who has experienced the Ipsy hand firsthand. Mark Forrest lives in Webster Groves, and he is a recovering stroke patient. So, Mark, welcome.
Thank you. And it's nice to meet you, doctor, after all these years.
Nice to meet you as well.
So, Mark, I understand you had a stroke 6 years ago. What did that do to your movements of your hand and your arm?
I was completely dead. I couldn't move it at all. I had had some hip movement and a little bit of knee movement. But other than that, nothing else would move.
So when did you hear that the Ipsy hand might be something that could help solve that problem?
My wife had heard about it through WashU, and I was on the list for doing studies for him. And Lauren had called me and wondered if I'd be interested in trying it out. So I said, oh, of course, because at the time I was getting depressed because people were telling me I wasn't going to improve anymore and this was going to be it. And I didn't believe that because I'm a person that says it's half full, not half empty.
Good for you. So, you still had hope. Well,
oh, yes. I was determined to get better. I didn't know how I was going to do it because I was pretty much done with all the therapy because they weren't helping anymore. So when Lauren called me and said, would I be interested? And I said, yes, please, because that just right there got my enthusiasm back up to say I'm going to get better.
So, Dr. Luthart, would this have been in a trial that Mark would have gotten a chance to use this device?
That's correct. So we had a number of clinical trials where we had enrolled patients to really, you know, prove that it could have an impact on motor function.
Okay. So, Mark, you got into this trial. You got to use this very cool space age kind of device. Did it take you a long time to get the hang of using it?
For me, no, because at the beginning, when we first put the hat on, we had to use a gel, so it was a little messy and a little uncomfortable, but I absolutely didn't do anything to help. And the machine at the beginning would start just kind of a program that would kind of just repeat itself as a function. So once you get the hang of the repeat of the motion of it, then you start working with your hand to get to follow the motion of the machine. So that's how I got started, and they just improved it all along. And I think I was involved with it for about 2.5 years and got a lot of things to help develop it so it would be easier for the patient to put on.
That's great.
And as far as using it, my hand today now, I'm holding things with it. I just got done building a boat for fishing, so I've improved quite a bit. I have use of my arm and movement with my hands and fingers. I still have a hard time picking up things, but at least I can hold things and help me do so with my left hand. So
yeah, and you're building a boat. I mean, Mark, I'm very impressed by this. Dr. Luthard, it must have been really cool to watch people in this trial be able to regain this function.
Well, you know, for me, you know, interestingly, you know, as the trials kind of begin, the you know, the researcher, myself, like the inventor, the engineer, you know, they keep a firewall between us so that we don't influence the outcome. So I don't get to meet a lot of the patients. And So, but I you know, every once in a while I get to hear stories and I get to hear kind of these really magical moments for me that, you know, in some senses are the most kind of impactful of kind of why we do this. And that, you know, hearing that, you know, somebody who had a paralyzed limb now can build a boat. You know, another example was, you know, one patient flagged me down and said, you know, Dr. Luthard, I just want to let you know, I can put my pants on again.
Mm.
And, you know, these moments where, you know, you've restored somebody's independence and autonomy, and just, you can see kind of like just the meaningfulness of kind of the things that you're telling you. And it just, I don't know, just it really, those are the moments that you work years for.
So, Mark, you mentioned that you've been using this for 2.5 years, or you had been using it for 2.5 years. I imagine is that about the length of time, Dr. Luthard, that people will be using these going forward?
Well, the clinical trials, you know, it's variable, but you know, the standard trial was for 3 months, and then you know, a lot of people recovered substantial function. But if people wanted to use it longer, we let a subset of them use it for longer periods of time.
Okay. And so, Mark, it sounds like you were in that class where you wanted to keep using it.
Oh, of course. And every time we get along, there always be something new or something they change to develop it to make it better. And I would help along saying, well, you can't, it was hard to begin to put the hand on, and it helped with the design of it, so it was easier for a person with one hand to be able to put it on. The headset was easy. Putting the hand on at the beginning was a little difficult with the straps and everything they adjusted to it. So, and I haven't seen a new piece yet, so I don't know exactly what it does now, but I hope they use some of my advice to make it easier for the patient to use. Because it really helped.
It's pretty easy these days.
So, Dr. Luthard, it sounds like there's been some real advances made even during the course of this trial that Mark was in.
Absolutely. So that over the years, you know, again, we really, you know, wanted to make these devices absolutely patient-centric. Can they put it on easily? Can they take it off easily? Can they engage with it easily? So, and again, input like this is absolutely critical. Like, I didn't like this, I didn't like that, this could be better. And really listening to that so that we can move it forward so that, again, it's something that people want to use, they look forward to using. But I think Mark would be very pleased with kind of the way that you can put it on and off these days.
So Mark, looking back at this experience of trying this Ipsy hand and having this in your life, how did it change your life overall?
Started immediately changing it because I had enough positive attitude now where I could see the difference of what it was like before. And after starting using the machine, you could see the difference. Mm-hmm. Because before that, you would have some slap of movement that you really wouldn't notice, and all of a sudden it was there. And now just using the machine just replicated so much that you can see the difference right away.
Well, Mark Forrest, we're so happy for you, and we want to thank you so much for joining us today.
All right. Thank you very much. Nice to meet you, Doctor.
Good to connect. Thank you very much.
And we're also talking today to Dr. Eric Luthard. He's a professor of neurosurgery at Washington University School of Medicine, the chief scientific officer at Neurolutions, Inc. We're going to take a quick break here, but we'll be back shortly to learn more about the Ipsy hand and more from Dr. Luthard. So if you have a question or comment about the Ipsy hand, you're welcome to give us a call. We're at 314-382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can also send us a tweet at STL on air or email us at talk@stlpr.org. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. Welcome back. We are talking today about the Ipsy hand. It's the most remarkable device invented right here in St. Louis. It allows stroke patients to regain the function of their hands and arms, basically by putting on a headset and a glove, an exoskeleton glove. They can get this device to move, and it starts to knit their brain function back together. It's quite remarkable. And we're talking about it here with Dr. Eric Luthart. He is a professor of neurosurgery at Washington University School of Medicine. He's the chief of WashU's Division of Neurotechnology, a professor of biomedical and mechanical engineering and neuroscience, and he's also the chief scientific officer at Neurolutions, Inc. That's the startup based within WashU that has brought out this device. So, Dr. Luthart, we did get a call from somebody. Nick from Wentzville called, and he's curious about people who might use the Ipsy hand. Does it depend on the type of stroke? And he also wants to know, what about people who would have traumatic brain injuries? Could it work for them too?
That's a great question. So really, you know, it's really indicated for chronic strokes. So people who have some type of injury to one side of their brain that is there for which they are left with a hemiparesis or hemiplegia in the upper extremity. So whether there's a number of different types of strokes that can cause that deficit, whether it be what we call an ischemic stroke, where a part of the brain loses blood, or a hemorrhagic stroke, where a blood clot injures the brain. But certainly, I think brain trauma could potentially be amenable in the future as well.
Okay, so there could be other options to use this, mm-hmm. this same device going forward.
That's right.
The other thing I found myself curious about, Mark was just raving about how much this had helped him, but he did indicate that it's kind of hard to pick up things, that's sort of the hardest part of this. Is there a clinical reason why that would be?
Well, I think that our patients have certainly, you know, shown improvement, meaning their arm is better, their hand is better. But once you get to that fine dexterity, you know, even just little things can affect that, you know, kind of that fine dexterity. So one thing I can't say is, does the Ipsy hand make people absolutely perfect? No, I can't say that. But it gives them meaningful amounts of function that can improve the quality of their lives. But some of those little imperfections, there may still be some smaller imperfections that they still will notice.
Hmm. So this is obviously such a breakthrough device here, and beyond just what it's going to do for these stroke patients, I understand it's the first clinically approved brain-computer interface. Walk us through what that means.
Well, you know, I particularly get excited about that because I've been passionate about neural interfaces and really tapping into the mind to kind of improve the human condition for a long time. I mean, and I think there's a large and growing field around this. And this is a passion of mine for the last 20 years. Mm. And nothing to thus far, as it relates to kind of a thought-controlled device, has made it through the FDA process yet. Until, you know, kind of the Ipsy hand.
Wow.
And so that, and it, the technical classification of this is, you know, a 510K de novo authorization. And what that means is that the FDA created a new category for approvals for brain-computer interfaces. So that for future types of technologies similar to this, they can use this as what we call predicate that really, you know, facilitates and makes it, you know, a shorter amount of time and more cost effective to get these type of, you know, technologies to help people. So I'm deeply excited that not only I think with the Ipsy hand are going to help a lot of people with a severe problem, but it really it creates the foundation for these type of approaches to help other people for a number of other indications.
What's an example of something? You know, I mean, you said you've been dreaming of this for 20 years. What's something you dream of going forward that could build on this?
Well, so I think that this idea of connecting the brain to kind of wearables to essentially remodel neural circuits, there's mm-hmm. a lot of neural circuits that need remodeling for a lot of, you know, different neurologic problems. This is not indicated currently, but again, just really emphasizing, like, you know, what are dreams going forward? Can
sure.
we expand this to different parts of the body? Can we think about this in the context of, you know, right now it's really, I think the majority of our population and the indication currently is for, you know, people over 18, but I think that there's a lot of pediatric motor disabilities that I think that this could be impactful for. And then I think there's just a wider network of how we think about, you know, connecting, you know, our brain signals and our brain intentions with input coming in that can lead to remodeling for a number of different cognitive disorders or cognitive injury or kind of cognitive dysfunction due to various types of injuries.
Hmm. We actually have another question that came in from another caller. Ralph from Wentzville is curious if there's any connection with the technology in the Ipsy hand to the military's efforts to be able to fly planes hands-free. Apparently, military pilots can now do that. That was news to me here. But do you know if there might be a relation between what you're having stroke victims do and what those pilots would be doing?
Well, I think some of the engineering and scientific principles are similar. And again, I'm not, just to be very clear, I'm not exactly sure what the military is doing either.
Sure. That's
but,
fair.
You know, that like I don't have that access, but or that clearance. But the idea of using non-invasive recordings from, you know, taken from the scalp, looking at signals associated with motor intentions, and converting that to kind of a mechanical output or a control output, such as, you know, whether it be pushing a button or moving a joystick or whatever that's important for pilots, that, again, it, very similar principles, you know, is my guess. So, but I think that, again, like that, and I think there's a number of companies that are doing this for a number of, you know, some medical and some non-medical applications. So, for instance, there are video game or kind of gaming companies that are trying to create these headsets either to, you know, allow you to, you know, more efficiently or effectively interact with your computer or with your headset or play video games. And so, again, it just, it, I think that this principle of tapping into the brain signals to control things, it's fundamentally a platform that people are going to use a lot. And the question is, you know, how do we optimize that usage for things that can help people like stroke or, you know, other things, you know, whether it be military or consumer oriented.
Video games. Hey, you might be onto something here. I couldn't help but notice this technology that you're using in this device. It said that it's licensed from Washington University. Are they potentially sitting on a gold mine with this?
You know, I don't know about that, but, you know, again, I think that the, again, for me, it's not the economics that's driving it. You know,
sure.
I think it's the impact. And, you know, if this really can scale to, you know, helping a lot of people, then, you know, the Washington University does own some of that intellectual property, and they'll probably get some licensing royalties from that. But again, it, you know, I can't say that that's, you know, that's not the central driver for this.
Sure. So with this particular device, my understanding is you had a pretty small clinical trial, that there were 23 people in this, and more than half of them didn't end up finishing the trial. Are you worried that for all the successes of this device, it's not for everyone, that it only makes sense for people maybe at a certain period in their life or a certain type of injury?
No, it's a very good question. And, you know, when we break down kind of those patients who weren't able to use it, there's a number of different reasons. Some of them are medical and some of them are non-medical. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, especially in a clinical trial, you have to make sure that people are absolutely committed to participating for that three-month trial. So sometimes people couldn't participate because they couldn't commit to that entire three-month duration. Sometimes, actually, kind of people had medical problems that came up that prohibited them from participating and getting enrolled. And then there are a smaller subset of patients who, for instance, when we're looking for their signals, they couldn't reliably generate a brain signal.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that's indicative that beyond just the motor impairment, that there's other cognitive impairments that prohibit them from fully participating in this. So you're right that, you know, could this not be for every stroke patient? Absolutely. Because it's right now it's intended for motor dysfunction. But if you have motor dysfunction plus other things, that may not be a good fit.
It was interesting hearing just how positive Mark was, the stroke patient we heard from, and how motivated he seemed to be to get something like this in his life and to make that happen. Can that also be a factor? The patient has to really want this.
Sure. I think motivation is key. And I think it's a two-way street in some ways, that certainly people have to be, you know, motivated to want to get this. But I think also one of the things that's very powerful is that when the patients use it, they see their hand move when they think about it.
That's pretty exciting.
And I think that this notion, and Mark was talking about this earlier, it's like people told him it wasn't going to get better. people, you know, say that it, you know, it's not going to happen. And the classic understanding is that 6 months after a stroke, the likelihood for recovery is exceedingly small. And here we have the system. You put it on, and you think about, you know, moving your hand, and your hand actually gets moved by this robotic exoskeleton. And I think that's kind of a bit of a moment of kind of reinitiating, you know, motivation, hope that, you know, hey, this is something that can potentially work for me. And so I think that just as the patient should be motivated to want to participate in this, I think the feedback they get can also kind of really amplify and support that motivation.
Hmm. Well, this is so exciting. Now that you have this FDA clearance, it's going to be out there for people who want to use this. Do you have any sense of how expensive this device is going to be?
You know, that is, fortunately, I'm the chief scientific officer and not, you know, kind of the
you have enough to worry
officer.
About without worrying about pricing.
But, right. And, but, you know, I think that there's right now there's a lot going on as it relates to reimbursement for these type of devices. You know, there's changing right now. There's and it's, I don't think it's fully resolved right now, but there's regulations right now that potentially can support through Medicare, Medicaid, people getting this device and getting it paid for devices that are both FDA approved and get a breakthrough designation. And there's only a handful of those technologies. Unfortunately, we're one of them. So I think that there's real hope that, that, you know, assuming kind of this legislation goes through or gets fully kind of integrated, that, that the reimbursement process will really support patients getting this.
Hmm. Well, Dr. Luthart, I want to thank you so much for joining us today and congratulations on this 20-year dream now realized.
Well, thank you very much. It's a real pleasure to be here.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here. If you learned something new from today's episode, consider leaving us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the easiest way to help people discover our show. We appreciate it. Thank you. St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association, saluting Earth Day on April 22nd with an ongoing commitment to help offset carbon emissions with sustainable harvesting of Missouri forests. Details at choosewood.com.